WBTV's Good Question is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Since 1910, more than 1,000 people have been sent to North Carolina's death row. And now in 2022, convicted criminals can still be sentenced to death. But the last time the state actually carried out an execution was in 2006. We're asking, why hasn't a state execution happened since?
The question isn't, do they deserve to die? It's, do we deserve to kill?
This is WBTV's Good Question. Welcome to WBTV's Good Question. Alex Giles here with my WBTV colleagues, Jamie Bull and Jack Vandertal. And we are joined by Kristen Collins. She is the Director of Public Information for the Center for Death Penalty Litigation in North Carolina. Kristen, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
First, wanted to just see if you could tell me a little bit about what the center does and how long it's been around.
Yeah, well, the Center for Death Penalty Litigation is a nonprofit law firm. So our staff is mostly lawyers and mitigation investigators who work on capital cases, and we represent many people on North Carolina's death row. But we also have a public education and communications wing because we see the death penalty really up close. We try to educate the public about how this system really works and to help them see that it's very, very unjust, the way that it does work. And we have been around, we were actually created by the federal government many decades ago as a resource center, a federally funded resource center to represent people on death row. But then we became a nonprofit sometime in the 80s or 90s, but we've been around a long time.
What made you want to work for this organization, Kristen?
I actually started out in my career as a newspaper reporter, and my first job was covering crime and courts for a small newspaper in Eastern North Carolina. So I got to see death penalty trials from that side, covering them as a reporter. And I saw how it just seemed absolutely random which people got a death sentence and which people, you know, got a life sentence at their trial. I watched one capital trial from start to finish. I wasn't even convinced that the person had committed the crime and they got the death penalty. And they're actually still on death row today. But so I started to see how random it was. And then when there was a job here that was open doing communications, I thought it seemed like a perfect fit.
You say part of what you're working on is education for the public as well and how this does and does not work. What do you mean by that? Touch more on that if you can.
Yeah, so I think that most people think about the death penalty sort of theoretically as an idea of, you know, is this moral or not moral? You know, if someone has killed, is it okay to kill them? You know, but they never actually see how it works when it comes to individual cases. And when you actually see it on the detail level, you just realize that there is no perfect system that can perfectly sort out who deserves to die and who deserves to live and which crime is worse than another crime. And in the end, it just ends up being based on so many different factors, our biases, on whether the person can afford a really great lawyer or just how good the lawyer they happen to get on their case was, what county the jury came from, how eager the prosecutor is to pursue the death penalty or not for political reasons. So it just becomes this completely unfair system. And then you see so many innocent people have gotten the death penalty. And when you look at these cases, I mean, we had someone on death row in North Carolina for 30 years before DNA was finally able to prove his innocence. And there's just really no way to know for sure whether we're executing innocent people.
Can you give us a little rundown of the history of the death penalty in North Carolina? Been around for decades, right?
Oh, well, I mean, the death penalty has been around since the beginnings of our country. And in North Carolina, it started as a local thing where it was just sort of sheriffs on hanging grounds, tying nooses, people picnicking and watching them execute mostly Black people. And then it transformed in 1910, it became a state-run system. And that's when they built Central Prison and they built the execution chamber that the state still uses today. And that system was almost indistinguishable from lynching for many decades. It was almost very overwhelmingly Black defendants. The trials often lasted a few hours before the person was convicted, as lynch mobs were trying to abduct people from the courtroom or from the jail. And you know, there were many children executed during those years. And then there was this huge revamping of the death penalty that happened in the 70s when the Supreme Court struck it down, and the modern death penalty was created. And in the modern death penalty, we did not erase many of the problems. It became a more complex system with a lot more appeals and that kind of thing. But we still saw, you know, huge numbers of Black defendants sent to death row in the 90s.
Which led to it being paused here in North Carolina, correct?
Yeah, we actually haven't had an execution here since 2006. And that started because there was litigation over the lethal injection process itself. It was discovered that the state was not carrying out executions according to its own laws and protocols. Mm-hmm. It didn't have doctors present as it was supposed to. So that led to them being halted. But then in the years since, a lot of other developments have happened. I mean, first of all, many people, we've had about, I think it was 7 or 8 people since 2006 have been exonerated. I might have my numbers mm-hmm. wrong, but it's around that number. And Henry McCollum was one of them who was on death row for 30 years. His brother Leon, he actually was resentenced to life at one point, but had initially been sentenced to death. He was also exonerated. So we've had these huge high profile exonerations of people on death row. And then we've also had the passage of the Racial Justice Act, right. Which revealed racism in death penalty cases across the state. And that's still being litigated today, which is a big reason why we haven't resumed any executions.
Where do we stand with some of that litigation? Do you know how close any of those matters are to being wrapped up? Do you foresee the death penalty being used again in the near future?
I don't foresee it being used in the near future, unless there was some huge shift. But right now, there was a big development in the Racial Justice Act, which allowed only 4 cases have been resolved under the Racial Justice Act so far out of over 100 cases that are outstanding on death row. And our state Supreme Court ruled that there can now be a new phase of litigation under the Racial Justice Act, that all these claims that were filed under the law can go forward. So that's in the process of beginning again, a whole new phase of that Racial Justice Act litigation. And there's a case moving forward in Johnston County right now. So I don't think that anything can go forward until these issues of racism have been resolved.
You were talking about the one gentleman on death row for 30 years, right before being exonerated, I think you said, right? Mm-hmm. Is being on death row just a completely different environment than general population in a prison? Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, well, death row is its own self-contained unit, and there are about 135 people on death row in North Carolina. Almost all of them were sentenced back in the 1990s. So because we are not really sentencing nearly as many people to death today as we used to, I think because the public just doesn't have the appetite for it that we used to. So most of those people have lived there for decades now. So many of them are older. And it's sort of a, it's probably a little bit of a tighter knit community than in general population, because people come and they stay and they're in this small community. They never get any contact visits. So any visits that they have with their family are through glass and bars. And then in the pandemic, often they were just over screens. Another thing about death row is, even though people are living there for sometimes 20 and 30 years, it's treated as if, you know, they're just waiting there to be executed. Mm-hmm. So there are very, very few jobs available to people or opportunities for, you know, education or other things. So it's really just a, it's an environment where they're just sort of waiting to die year after year after year.
I'm not sure you'll know exactly, I guess, the answer to this, and it might be kind of complex, but because there hasn't been an actual execution carried out since 2006, are a lot of those folks still going through appeals processes? Are they still working with their attorneys, or are a lot of them just kind of sitting tight for now?
Yeah, it really varies. I mean, some are in very active appeals process in their cases. Others have gotten through most of that process and don't have a lot happening legally. Most of them do have a Racial Justice Act claim, but it may not, you know, there's really just one main case that's moving forward on that. So many of them, I mean, they all have attorneys. They have the right to attorney because they're facing death, but they may not have a lot of actual legal developments happening in their case right now.
Kristen, to your point earlier, to people who don't understand the system as well as people more on the inside, do you feel there is a way to change the public perception of the death penalty is justice served in a sense, like a life for a life? Is there a way to sway that public opinion into a way where the person who is sentenced ultimately gets to live? Is there an alternative to what we have now?
So there's, I feel like there's the way that we are trying to help the public see is sort of a multi-pronged approach. One is to reveal the really systemic problems with the death penalty, which is, you know, there are many of them, but one is obviously race. We've see a huge impact of race on juries, and that Black citizens are not getting the right to serve on capital juries, which skews results of trials. Another systemic factor that we've done a lot of research on and tried to bring into the public is the fact that so many of our cases, these people on death row were tried 20 and 30 years ago when the laws were entirely different. We've had a lot of reforms to our laws since then, and many people on death row didn't get the benefit of those laws. And then the other way is also just bringing forward the stories of individuals who are on death row. You know, some of them have really strong claims of innocence. Others do not have strong claims of innocence, but you can see how their sentences were incredibly disproportionate. There's one person I'm thinking of who has been on death row since the early 90s. He was 19 or 20 years old at the time of the crime. He was offered a plea for second degree murder. And he would have been out of prison if he had taken that plea in maybe 10 years. And he didn't take it because the plea would have required him to testify against someone in his family. And he didn't want to do that. So he didn't take the plea, and instead he got the death sentence, and he's on there all those years later. And it doesn't make any sense. But I think the biggest argument, you know, when people say, oh, a life for a life, I like to think of what Brian Stevenson says, who is an amazing advocate and attorney who's represented people on death row. And he says, you know, the question isn't, do they deserve to die? It's, do we deserve to kill? And when you think about it from that perspective, and you think about the history of our society and the openly racist ways in which we've killed people in the past, I think the answer to that question is clearly no, we don't deserve to kill.
What would have to happen for us to completely take the death penalty off the books here in North Carolina?
Well, the first path to that would be the legislature, just, you know, abolishing capital punishment, passing a bill. But barring that, which does not look likely at this moment, another way to end the death penalty would be for the state Supreme Court to strike it down as unconstitutional. And then another avenue, this wouldn't take the death penalty off the books permanently, but the governor has a lot of power to grant clemency to people on death row. So he could choose to, you know, take any number of people or all of the people off of death row if that was what he wanted to do.
Are you satisfied at the moment that it's just largely moot?
Not at all. As long as there's a death penalty, I mean, North Carolina, things are on hold because of all this litigation that's been going on, but we don't even have an official moratorium on the death penalty. It's always a threat. It could always come back. And it's also just cruel and inhumane system to be sentencing people to death when we don't actually have a functioning execution system, and then leaving them sitting on death row for decades. And it doesn't just hurt them. It hurts their families. It hurts a lot of innocent people in this whole situation. And it also, having a death penalty skews our entire system of criminal punishment to more severe punishments. You know, if you have a death penalty, suddenly life without parole doesn't seem as extreme when it actually is an incredibly extreme punishment. The idea that someone could never get out of prison no matter what. And even that we have given that sentence to children, people who are under 18 have gotten the sentence of life without parole. And somehow that seems more humane because they didn't get the death penalty.
You were talking earlier about how, you know, back in the day, I guess, right, it was the town square almost kind of a thing, and lots of people watching this sort of thing. We know that's not necessarily the case anymore, but there are witnesses to these sorts of things. Have you personally witnessed one of these things? Have you talked to people who have witnessed them, and can you describe that?
I have not witnessed an execution myself. Some of the attorneys that I work with have witnessed the executions of their clients. And I've also talked to prison employees, a former prison warden who has witnessed and actually had to help carry out an execution. And I guess what I can say is that a system that kills people, it creates so much trauma. And that trauma is not just for the person who's killed. It ripples out in ways that we really don't imagine. To, you know, attorneys, they still 20 and 30 years later are living with these memories of these clients that they had to watch die, and they wonder what else could I have done to save their life. You know, all the mitigation investigators and people who work on their cases, the people, pen pals and other people who become close to these people while they're living on death row. And then even, you know, I talked to a man, he worked in the prisons, and he had to help carry out an execution. And he ended up having sort of an emotional breakdown years later in his life that he really felt was due to the unresolved trauma of carrying out this execution, that at the time he just thought he was doing his job.
Have you talked to victims' families post-execution? Do they have some sort of reaction to this? Do they find any peace in it, or just the opposite?
Well, I mean, we work with a number of victims' family members who are against the death penalty and who say, you know, that we have one woman, Jean Parks, who's become a real outspoken advocate against the death penalty. Her sister was murdered in Raleigh many years ago. And actually the person who was convicted, they now believe is innocent. But anyway, she's a really strong advocate against the death penalty. And what she always says is, what the death penalty does is it takes what she experienced, losing her sister to murder, you know, what her family, the grief and pain that they went through, and it just inflicts it on another family. Mm-hmm. And it adds more and more suffering and grief to the world. And how does that make anything better? But I mean, there certainly are, you know, I've heard interviews and things with people who say that with victims' families who say that they felt good that the person was executed. But in a lot of ways, sometimes I think that our system only offers people this one thing. You know, here's how you can feel better. This is what justice is. And maybe if our system could offer a lot more resources and restorative options for helping heal harm after a crime, people wouldn't feel like the only path to justice is to kill another person.
Kristen, just have a couple more for you before we let you go here. Our neighbors to the south in South Carolina are now allowing firing squad as an option for people who are being put to death. When you heard that, what did you think?
Well, you know, a few states have moved to these other methods of execution because it's lethal injection has become so difficult to carry out because a lot of the companies that supply the drugs refuse to supply them for the purpose of killing people. So yeah, this is a little bit of a trend. States trying to run around and figure out how they can keep killing people even when they can't get the drugs that they need. But I would say that lethal injection really, I think that most states moved to lethal injection because it made the process seem more sanitized. It made it easier for people to stomach. You know, it looks like a medical procedure when you carry it out as a lethal injection. But as we see states moving back to things like a firing squad, I think what that does is it reveals the death penalty for what it really is. It's violence and it's murder.
Back here in North Carolina, based on what you've read and what you've seen over the last several years, what would you say is more likely? The death penalty is taken off the books here in North Carolina or the state executes someone again?
I think that we are clearly moving away from the death penalty in North Carolina. Not only have we not had an execution since 2006, we also see that counties are trying many fewer cases capitally than they used to, that juries are saying no most of the time, even when they get a capital case. We just had a capital trial recently where it ended in a hung jury that the jury didn't even agree that he was guilty of the crime because there's very strong evidence that he was innocent. So I think the public has really moved away from the death penalty. And I don't see, a strong groundswell of people wanting to return to executing people in North Carolina. But I guess the question is when there will be the political will to make it official and take it fully off the books. And I can't predict yet when that will happen.
I was wondering too, then along those lines, we hear this sometimes that the cost, which is obviously not paramount necessarily to this conversation, but is it more expensive to put someone on death row to have litigation battles ongoing versus putting someone in prison for the rest of their lives? Is there a cost difference there?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. I mean, because that's one argument you hear for the death penalty is like, I don't want to pay to keep them in prison, but it's actually far more expensive to give someone the death penalty. The trial is unbelievably longer and more complex and requires far more lawyers and experts and all of that. So that's a huge expense. Then we have, you know, someone being specially housed on death row, entitled to many more appeals, to two lawyers. Those are all things that are necessary because mm-hmm. we've seen that there are innocent people on death row. So if you're going to try to execute someone, you have to give them the best lawyers and the best chance at proving that they didn't do this crime or that their trial was unfair. So you go through all these layers of appeals, then just the process of keeping them on death row for all those years, and then the process of executing them. There were studies that show it costs a couple million. I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers at the on the tip of my tongue, but that it costs maybe a couple million more dollars to execute someone than to keep them in prison.
And as far as a deterrent goes, is there any evidence that it acts as any kind of deterrent?
No, there really is not any evidence. there were some studies that some lawmakers in North Carolina like to tout, but they have since been debunked. And just what you see in reality, when you deal with these clients who are on death row, is you see people who are not living their lives in a way that they're calculating before what happens there. What possible punishment could I get if I do this versus this? No, I mean, when these crimes happen, it's in the desperate moments when people aren't thinking straight, when they're not making good decisions. So the idea that what punishments we have in place is going to affect people's decision-making in those moments seems pretty delusional.
Kristen Collins from the Center for Death Penalty Litigation here in North Carolina, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Very, very informative.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
WBTV's Good Question is a product of WBTV in cooperation with Queen City Podcast Network and Balto Creative Media.
From WBTV, Good Question is produced by Jack Vandertal. Special thanks to Jamie Bull. For the Queen City Podcast Network, WBTV's Good Question is produced by Brian Baltashevitz and Maria Delgado. Production coordinator, Taylor Robinson.
It is recorded at the Queen City Podcast Network studios at Advent Coworking in Charlotte, North Carolina.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.